Hey, Mason, I really need a good gift for my generic loved one. Any ideas?
Oh, yeah, Andrew. I have the gift they need. If you sign up for GoDaddy's Economy Blogcast package, you'll receive 1 gig of disk space, 100 gigs of bandwidth, recording tools, and much more.
Whoa, with all those features, I'd guess that kind of package will run me at least $20 a month and be plastered with ads.
You're wrong, Andrew. The Blogcast Economy package is just $4.49 a month for 12 months.
That's a deal, and a perfect way to get your own website, blog, or podcast started.
Ooh, yeah, that is a deal. Plus, enter code MUGGLE when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
This is Professor McGonagall welcoming you to all to MuggleCast, hoping you enjoyed. Dobby, come here. Dobby.
Yes, well, I'd just like to say how very pleased I am to introduce MuggleCast to all of you. Thank you.
Because I'm not on the show this week, so be prepared to fast forward through most of it. This is MuggleCast episode 139 for March 30th, 2008. Whoa! Welcome, everyone, all you MuggleCast listeners. This is MuggleCast. I am Andrew Sams. Yeah, all right. And, we got some other hosts on the show, and so we're just gonna pop it over. Is there, anyone else in here?
Whoa, yeah.
Hey.
Hi!
There's more than one Andrew.
Yeah, this is Andrew, my personality cocky self.
We used to have a show where everyone's Andrew. That would get confusing as hell.
Yeah, that would. But, you know, it does sound a lot like him, I guess.
I am impressed.
Oh, well, thank you.
Very impressed.
That's a huge compliment.
Matt?
What?
Oh, sorry, we thought it was Andrew. You know.
All of you know Andrew's not here, but the ones who are on the show, it's me. I'm Matthew Britton.
I'm Laura Thompson.
It's me. I'm Jamie Lawrence.
And I'm Mike Attanabell.
Jamie is here, everyone. Finally, after a 17-month delay of him being on the show,
he's
finally
back. 17 months, yeah. Was the show going 17 months ago?
It's been something like that, hasn't it?
Although, if you measured it in Blickle years, I'm sure it would have been much longer.
Right, oh, it would have been, Laura. It would have been. But Pickle Pack is on its last legs, I believe. I know.
Yeah, it's
going to be over very soon. It is very sad. By the way, the show, when are we ending it? Because it seems like it's going on for longer than was the original plan. I've been out of the loop so much.
And to answer your question,
I don't really
Jamie,
know.
Yeah?
I did some calculations, actually. The show has been going on for 31 months.
31 months, eh?
Oh,
31 months.
That does not sound like a lot at all.
No, it's
31 months.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It's almost 3 years, though.
Well, and
that is
Jamie,
a lot.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because we do actually have an announcement that we'll be getting to in a few minutes after Micah does his news.
Oh, really?
Pertaining to the life of the show, so we're pretty excited about that.
Oh, yes. Now let's take it over to Micah Tannenbaum in the MuggleCast newsroom. After a month of being absent, he is back. So let's go over to Micah.
All right, thanks, Andrew. As many of you are well aware, J.K. Rowling and Warner Brothers are involved in an ongoing lawsuit with RDR Books over a companion novel seeking publication by Harry Potter Lexicon owner Steve Vander Ark. The Associated Foreign Press reported earlier this week that Joe is expected to appear in court in New York City next month A New York federal district court judge ordered earlier this week that the case go to trial beginning April 14th, and Rowling's presence has been requested by RDR Books. RDR lawyer David Hammer was quoted as saying, "We asked for her and they said they would provide her. I would say it would be very unlikely that she would not appear. The witness list must be submitted this week by April the 4th. We will keep you posted as this story continues to develop." And on Friday, the CBS Early Show did a piece on the growing sport of Quidditch on college campuses across the country. As previously reported in USA Today, Quidditch is becoming a very popular sport among college students, and now the school that began it all, Middlebury College, is going on an 8-school tour during their spring break recess. On Friday, Middlebury was at Amherst College in Massachusetts, and that is where the CBS Early Show broadcasted from. To see video from the CBS Early Show, be sure to head over to MuggleNet.com. The Harry Potter book series has once again won Favorite Book at the 2008 Kids' Choice Awards. As most of you probably know, Potter has repeatedly won for the award for Favorite Book in past years. And finally, Nigel Newton, the chief executive of the UK Potter publisher Bloomsbury, will disclose this Tuesday that the phenomenal success of Deathly Hallows was the major factor behind an increase in annual profits from £5.2 million to more than £17 million this past year. A report by the Sunday Herald continues that Newton will claim the Potter effect will continue for years ahead as the group dips into cash reserves of more than £40 million built up from past Potter sales to promote new talent and to make further acquisitions. That's all the news for this March 30th, 2008 edition of MuggleCast. Back to the show.
All right, thank you, Micah. Micah, it's been a good week of news or a slow week?
Well, he's just told you.
Technically. Well, yeah, but I wasn't really listening.
No, it's all right. I would say when you look at it, it hasn't had a lot of news, but the news stories that we have had have been, you know, pretty big. So first off, obviously, J.K. Rowling is reported to appear in court on April 14th here in New York City. And I say here because I'm pretty close to New York City. I don't know if that would apply to Jamie and Laura and you, but she's actually supposed to be on this witness list that is being submitted by April 4th. And based on this article that was put out, I think it was earlier this week, it's all things sort of point to her having to show up. And RDR Books, who would be the defendant in this case, says that she's going to be there. So I don't really think that Joe probably wants to have to pick up and travel in the middle of the spring now and have to come all the way to New York just for this trial. But it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Do you know how people swear an oath on the Bible? She should swear one on a Harry Potter book.
Well, Micah, you and Andrew were thinking about going to the courthouse, right?
Well, I don't know if you can actually do that, to be honest. I don't know if it's an open trial. I would think that some media would be allowed to attend to cover the trial and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it'd be interesting because I would think that also maybe somebody like Joe would want the fan sites to cover it and to get a real perspective as to what's going on.
I don't think it works like that, though. I don't think it's like a movie premiere where you can jump up and down and scream and say, "Go, Joe."
No. I mean, just
but
to kind of sit and observe.
There will be people outside the courthouse doing that, though.
Yeah, but that's not really the same as being inside.
Oh, I know, but it's really bizarre when you think about it, because here there's this serious trial going on and all these fans are going to convene and treat it like a premiere or a book reading, and it just, I find that interesting.
Well, they'll probably just show up just to show their support for Joe.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I'd laugh if she wins and then come November we see the judge in like a walk-on role on Half-Blood Prince or something.
Yeah.
No Americans, Jamie. No Americans are allowed.
In what? Oh. Yeah, but I'm sure she can bend the rules to avoid avoid a lawsuit. Yeah.
I don't think she's going to have to bend the rules for anything. I think she's going to win.
She will, yeah. She will. It's done and dusted. Well.
So let's move on to our next big top news discussion. We got a new Half-Blood Prince pick, official from Warner Brothers.
Doesn't it?
Doesn't
it feel like every time a new movie comes out, the first picture we get, or one of the first pictures, is the three of them sitting in front of the fire looking concerned about something?
Yeah, exactly. It is the concern
it's the
syndrome.
Same picture.
But, I mean, does it look kind of staged to you? Because to me, it looks completely like they took this picture on purpose.
Man, it's a movie.
Like, I don't even think it's going to be in the movie.
Of course it's staged.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're saying that it wasn't actually taken from a scene. You think that they actually do a photo shoot, basically?
Yeah, I mean, because this kind of reminds me of one of those pics from Order of the Phoenix when the trio is in the Hog's Head and Harry looks like he's about to get up, and then so does... Harry's already standing up, and Ron looks like he's about to get up, and Hermione's looking to the side.
Yeah.
You remember
that
photo I'm talking about? We don't really even see that scene in it, but
and also,
I don't know. It just reminds me of the
Laurie,
same picture.
You say that every time there comes the concern picture, and then people draw conclusions from it. They're like, oh, I think it's going to be a dark movie full of suspense just from that concerned picture.
Well, there's like a whole page of comments just about Hermione's hair. It's a huge issue in every single movie. All the fans have to comment on how Emma's hair is in the movie.
It is exciting, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Oh,
have
I know.
You
that's
seen
the
curls?
First thing I think of.
Well, honestly, I don't like Hermione's hair in this because it's blonde, so I don't really think she's going to be even that good of an actress in this book. So I don't even think, or this movie, so I'm not going to watch it.
Cool. Yeah, same here.
Yeah. All right.
It's just, I don't know. I mean, it's a nice picture, but I just feel like it's always the same. They always have Hermione holding a newspaper, and it's, as Andrew would say, the typical Emma Watson concern face, and then Ron always looks somewhat confused.
And he's always in the back. It's always Harry and Hermione in the front, and Ron's always pushed in the back.
Yeah, that's always bothered me. Anytime you look at the movie posters, Ron is always in the back. What is with that? Seriously.
No idea.
He's Harry's best friend, guys.
I know. And Ron's eating walnuts. Who eats walnuts in a bowl?
Come to England, Matt. You'd be surprised.
I guess so. I'm really not.
That's one of the less weird things we do.
What's that? Sorry, I missed.
Eating walnuts.
Oh.
From a bowl.
You crazy people.
In a wizarding school.
Well, have you guys seen? I mean, on the Daily Prophet newspaper, is that Slughorn's picture in it? Do you guys think?
Mm-hmm,
it kind of looks like the actor who plays him.
I haven't studied it that closely. I was too busy looking at Emma's hair.
I know.
I can't get over it. It's so wonderful.
Wow. Really?
Nice input, Mike.
Well, what's interesting about that, and I actually just looked at the picture right now, is it looks like the word ministry is on the paper, so I was wondering if that could be the new minister.
Hey, a book. A piece
it looks like more disappointment at ministry, if you read it.
Or disappearances.
Yeah, at ministry. So, or it could be some person
sense.
Who disappeared.
It's going to be weird. I just have a feeling David Yates is going to do his whole Daily Prophet transitions again in this movie.
I thought those were awesome. Did you not like them?
Oh, I did. No. I did. Sorry.
What did everyone else think of those?
It was a gimmick, but it's cool. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it definitely quickened the pace, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it did.
I thought it was a good pacing tool because they could get across a lot of information without having to use up time on it in the film, I guess. Like stuff that we didn't necessarily need to see acted out.
It's definitely one of the biggest. Order of the Phoenix is the biggest book in the series, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that would explain why there's so many montages in the movie as well.
Yeah.
Let's move on to some more announcements. Currently, MuggleCast is number one on Podcast Alley.
Woo!
Still, this entire month. It's been MuggleCast March.
Awesome. Awesome.
It has.
We have to come up with some clever term for April so we can...
Maple is still not doing it for me.
Maple.
Isn't that just adding the letter M to the beginning of April?
Yeah, it is.
Oh.
And Maple.
Maple.
and then May.
May. That's a stretch, though, Jamie.
I don't think the fans would get that, though.
Well, would it
I
be
see the, I don't see the connection.
Or is it just May?
May. Two M's. All right. Well, let's move on to one more announcement. The reason why Andrew is not on this show is because Andrew is currently in Oregon, Portland, Oregon, to be precise, doing a little on-set visit to the Twilight film. Have you guys heard about this?
Yeah. Actually, he was...
boasting
he
about
met
it
a few
the other
the...
day.
Yeah. he's very, very excited. I just talked to him a little while ago, and he said that he's seen... well, Matt, you said he saw all of the... for those of you who read Twilight, the Cullen... siblings.
Yes, he saw all the Cullen family. The Cullen family is the vampire family, if you don't know from the books.
Yeah.
And he also talked to Robert Pattinson, whom you all know played Cedric Diggory in the Goblet of Fire film, and
did some coke with him.
you mean drank some coke, right?
Smoked a little weed, you know.
Yeah, oh, sorry, God. Drank some coke with him.
And many of you are probably wondering why he's on the set. Well, this kind of leads into this, another announcement that we have all been talking about and deciding on for quite some time, and we've actually decided to... well, since I haven't been on the show very much, does anyone else want to talk about this? This is a really big announcement.
Yeah,
it is a huge
announcement. So, you know, a lot of people have been writing in for a while that are really, really upset about us ending the show in April or May, because obviously there's only so much Harry Potter content we have. But we know that there are actually a lot of fans who love other types of fantasy, you know, genres and other types of books and stuff. So we thought, why not expand our show to encompass all of those other fandoms? What do you guys think of that? Does that sound good? Yeah? No?
Yeah.
With the new ones
awesome
coming
idea.
Out as well. We've got Twilight, Spiderwick Chronicles, you know, all that kind of awesome stuff. So
yeah, see, we were thinking about Spiderwick, and we haven't, you know, 100% fitted into how we're going to schedule the show. But here's how we've got it broken down at this point. We've got this new show, the new MuggleCast, as you might call it, broken down into four different segments right now. We've got Totally Twilight, which is when we're going to dedicate that time to, like, a chapter of the Twilight series. Also, we're going to go over some movie discussion. Obviously, Andrew's at the set right now, so he'll bring us a full report, and it'll be excellent. For those of you who are all about Narnia, we're going to do a thing right now. It's called Welcome to Narnia. By the way, if you guys have any better suggestions for the names of these segments, please feel free to email them in. We are always open to suggestion.
We are.
And in that, I mean, also, there's, you know... There's all the Narnia movies going on right now, so that'll be great. We'll do chapter by chapter on that as well. And for those of you who are big Lord of the Rings fans, we're going to have Journey to Middle Earth, which will, of course, cover analysis. And I think we'll probably talk a lot about the upcoming Hobbit movie.
Yes.
So that should be pretty good. And we've decided that we will, of course, still have Harry Potter as
because
part of our
show. Because we started off as one, so we're still going to end as one, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, exactly.
There would be no reason to cut Harry Potter out. Like, and I know that would upset a lot of people, too. Don't you guys think?
Oh, yeah, especially. I mean, they wouldn't even listen to the show if we didn't talk about at least 10 or 20 minutes of Harry Potter.
And they go around killing people. Serial killing people. So, you know, kind of that.
Oh, God, we wouldn't want to start a mass spree of
for death.
Serial killers.
MuggleCast kills.
So, what... I think Andrew came up with this one. Sounds like something he'd come up with anyway. We're gonna put all that into a segment called Muggle Minicast, which I think he kind of took as a cue from the older shows when we would do the smaller episodes, you know, the 20, 30-minute ones.
Yeah, I remember those, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to combine a lot of that into maybe like a 20-minute segment. So this is all, we're hoping to put this into effect next week. Do you guys think?
Well, also, you've missed out the fifth segment, which we want to do Star Wars, since that's a huge, huge deal as well. People still like
oh,
it.
Oh,
yes,
really?
Definitely Star Wars, and yeah. We're thinking about having like another mini-segment for other stuff like Star Wars and Spiderwick, because since there's nothing really coming out right now, we're just going to combine them all just in case there's a new big news event or something to talk about.
But on the Star Wars one, we want to call it Force Feedback, but we're currently in talks with the lawyers at Microsoft because they make a gaming controller called Force Feedback.
Oh, that's
so,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we just have to talk to them and stuff like that. But hopefully it should be sorted out soon, which is cool.
Hopefully it's all great. And if you listeners are kind of concerned about if we're going to keep doing chapter by chapter, we are going to do it, but we're just going to kind of condense it into like a 10 to 15 minute discussion at the very, very most. Because, I mean, this is a lot of stuff to talk about. So everything's going to be at least 20 minutes long.
Right. And I mean, the way we figured it is, it seems like a happy medium when you think about putting chapter by chapter into a smaller segment, because you have people who think that we either drone on about stuff too long, or you think people who think, you know, people who think we don't spend enough time. So this way we can just pick out a couple of key things from the chapters and discuss those for 7 or 8 minutes each. And then it'll all be good, I think.
I think it's absolute crap, to be honest with you. I think you cannot take away from what we've been working on for the past 3 years now and change it over into something else.
Micah.
Well, we're doing it.
This is an executive decision here.
So where are Andrew and Ben?
We all vote. Well, Ben doesn't matter anymore.
Kevin made the decision.
No, really, we really did sit down and talk about this for a long time. I mean, Matt, when did this talk originally start? It seems like it
this
was like
this originally
February?
Talked after the Spiderwick movie came out, and everyone was talking about oh my god, they're going to do Spiderwick cast, and basically that kind of whoever really just wrote that to us or brought that to our attention, you pretty much made that decision for us.
Yeah.
Because you're the ones who brought that into our heads and we started discussing it.
Well,
and
it's funny because we viewed it as a joke originally. You know, we kind of joked around about Spiderwick cast, but actually, I really think it's going to be a good idea. And I think that when you guys see it in action, you're really, really going to like
enjoy it. Yeah.
I think it'll grow on you, Micah.
No, I don't think so, man. I don't think I'd continue on with the show if that was the case.
I can't fire you, so we're going to have to talk to Andrew about that.
Yeah, you definitely will. I'm not putting up with that stuff. It's absolutely stupid.
Will you stay on through the end of this episode at least?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll just drop out in the middle since you guys aren't taking this very seriously anymore.
No, don't do that, please.
No, we really are taking it seriously, Micah.
Come on.
Gosh.
This is just unbelievable. You guys have no dedication whatsoever.
That's... All right, let's not get into
this. Yeah, you know what? I'm sick of this. We need to move on. All right, so we're going to move on to some Muggle Mail.
Our last Muggle Mail.
Yeah. Well, we might still do one or two more Muggle Mails, you know.
Yeah,
Spider Mail. We'll be doing Spider Mail. Obi-Wan Mail.
Spider Web Mail.
Yeah.
Okay, Laura, you want to get the first one done?
Yeah, sure. Here, our first one comes from Shannon. She says, in episode 138, you guys were talking about box sets and to what extent people bought the books and movies in box sets. I think a very important thing to remember is the people currently reading the books and watching the movies, kids and their parents. By the time the last movies and books come out, the kids who sat with their mommies and daddies every night to read Harry Potter will be grown up. A lot of them will be going off to college. And who will get to keep all the Harry Potter books and movies, mom and dad or the kids? So somebody is going to have to buy them all over again. The same goes for siblings. When there is one set of movies per household and there are two kids in the family, one moves away. Who keeps the books and movies? It happened to me when my older brother, who I shared the series with, moved to Washington, D.C. He kept the old set and I got a brand spanking new box set. Well,
that is true.
Shannon, what I did before I left for college was I just ripped all of my DVDs onto my computer and then I left
them
at
home.
That's cool.
Piracy.
Yeah.
Good. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah. We always support that here at MuggleCast.
The thing
of
is,
course,
I didn't rip Harry Potter though. Don't worry, Warner Brothers. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, but to be honest, they own everything, so
yeah,
so you can't really rip a movie and not, you know, cause them to lose £12. But I don't want a brand spanky new box set because they're new covers. Well, especially here in the UK, I don't know if they're new over there, but they have these crappy stars on them. It's all sort of like new age and you know, fantasy-ish.
They add stuff to the covers that you can't take off, and it sucks.
Yeah, I want an old-style Harry Potter book, old school, not the new
ones.
Well,
they're doing that with the movie covers, too.
Oh, what's wrong with them?
Like, they have these banners on the original Harry Potter DVDs. It's like these little Celtic-style bands around the edges of it. I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on that, too.
Yeah.
Why do they have to mess with it? Seriously.
You know, I don't know. Maybe to grab people's attention. But I the way I think about it, it's not just people who need doubles of it that are going to buy it. I mean, there are so many people who are fans of books like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Narnia, and they collect this kind of stuff. There are people who will go out and buy these box sets of books and movies, and they will never open them.
It's
They'll
true.
Just have them to sit on a shelf. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with collecting. But that's mainly why they do it, because there are a lot of collectors out there.
For a collector's standpoint. And I agree with that, yeah.
But everyone's got it. Like, the box sets with the new books, everyone's got them, haven't they?
Like, no.
No, but I mean, like, it's not rare. Like, I can understand collectors getting, like, a first edition, like, half-blood prints or whatever. But a box set, you know, it's a box set for a reason, because there's nothing special inside. I realize that's a bit cold-hearted, but, you know.
Well, with just Harry Potter books in general, they don't just sell a box set of the books. They also sell, like, a Hogwarts carrying case with it, too. I think that's what a lot of the fans like to do, too, is, like, just to buy the extra features that come with it. Which is why, like, a lot of companies, like, release, like, 2-disc Ultimate Platinum Special Ultimate Edition DVDs with an extra, like, bookcase that comes with the DVD or an extra DVD that comes with it. So, I think definitely the special edition that comes with it.
Which is annoying, Matt, because I searched for Family Guy the other day, because I want to buy the DVDs, because it's an awesome show, isn't it?
Oh,
but
of course.
There are like 4 million different box sets, and one's like, you know, $100, one's like $101, and there's new stuff in each of them. Like, one had poker chips, and I was like, well, poker chips would be cool, but it's a bit of a gimmick. I just want Family Guy. But then I thought, well, perhaps I should get the poker chips since I'm buying the box set anyway, and what's another $20 when you're spending, you know? It caused me
and that's
a great
exactly
amount of grief.
What they're doing too. That's their whole intention.
I know.
For you to think, well,
I feel like
it's
a guinea
only
pig.
$10 more for this. Yeah, you're conforming to the man.
I know. I just feel like I'm lost, man. I'm lost. I just wander this earth. I have no idea what my place in this world is.
I'm just a pawn in the game of life,
yeah.
I guess.
Since we're trying to keep Jamie on the show, Jamie, why don't you read the next Muggle Mail?
All right, okay. This is from Graham Hansen, 18, from Perth, Australia. Subject, Harry Potter male fans. Which I think should be male Harry Potter fans. But Graham says, there is quite clearly a gender inequality in the Harry Potter fandom. This really doesn't extend to fantasy in general, Lord of the Rings for one. And I certainly think that masculine stereotypes play a role. For one, it isn't considered manly to read at all for some stupid reason. However, if a man is to read, it should be a manly action book, or at least one which is geared towards adults. As the Harry Potter series not only is a series of books, it is primarily a series marketed towards children, making it twice as bad for males to like. For females, on the other hand, it seems that it is socially acceptable for them to like childish things, such as Hello Kitty, which I haven't heard of. It sounds crap, though. And the light, which only weirdo nerd losers are allowed to like for some reason. Why? Why can't we all love Hello Kitty and Harry Potter equally? Oh, and the high amount of male podcasters is just due to the image of technology in society. It isn't okay for girls to be into technology, but they do get Harry Potter, it seems. Absolutely love the show. Easily the best Potter podcast around. From Graham. Thank you, Graham.
Okay.
So, Matt and Micah, do you guys kind of want to give us a recap? Because Jamie and I weren't on last week, and I think you guys talked
about
gender.
Well, I wasn't on.
Gender.
Micah, you were the only person who was on last week to discuss this. What is Graham talking about?
Well, last week on the show, I think that one of the voicemail questions actually was focusing on the fandom as a whole and why there seemed to be more girls who are fans of Harry Potter and fans of the podcast as a whole, and also, with that being said, why are there also more male podcasters as opposed to female podcasters? And I think when you look at it, it kind of flows together. And part of what Andrew was saying was, look, with the podcast, it's really a technological thing. And for some reason, guys seem to be more into technology and working with all those types of things than girls do. I'm not saying that that's the case every single time, but that's why, you know, we were talking about a lot of us got into it because of that reason. Yeah, we all read Harry Potter, but one of the cool aspects of it was being able to do a podcast. And I brought up the fact that I really joined because it was an online radio show, and I thought it would be, you know, just a great thing to get involved with. And, you know, Andrew kind of said something along the same lines, Mikey as well. And so even though we all love the books, you know, this is kind of the reason why we got into it, because podcasting was just kind of this new, cool technological thing at the time. It still is today. And, you know, kind of the female following we thought was because we're all guys. So,
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think it's because you're guy. Not, and no offense, like, it's not that I'm saying that it's, I'm not saying that the following is undeserved. I would never say anything like that.
No, but to be honest with you, Laura, Andrew's answer, I think, bordered on a little bit more arrogance than the way I put it, but...
He basically said that girls only listen because we're a bunch of like squealy fangirly types, and what? Like, is that basically what he said? Or
I don't know if he put it like that, but I don't know. Maybe
well,
should roll
I was,
his
I was
audio
listening
from
to
last
week. I was actually just listening to that part of the episode, and I think it must have been Mikey who said that it's the reason why like more guys like Star Wars and Star Trek and stuff than Harry Potter. Honestly, I don't think you can really compare that with Harry Potter, because Harry Potter started as a book, whereas Star Wars and Star Trek started off as a TV show. And generally, I think as the gender goes, the males kind of watch a little more TV than read, as in women, females tend to watch, to read a little more.
I mean,
you
almost have to do polling on this and see, because it's like with Star Wars and Star Trek, though, it's science fiction, and I guess guys probably are more into science fiction than they are into fantasy, which is kind of what Harry Potter is. So are more girls generally into fantasy books than guys? And you know, it's just weird. It's, I mean, I don't know how, you know, Laura's
so
the only female.
There are so many factors that can explain it.
There really are.
There are so many factors that can explain that. Like, you know, a sort of, perhaps, you know, how society is organized nowadays, perhaps males, their time is better suited to, like, watching a specific program that's set. Because, you see, I have this theory that psychologists run the entire world. Like, you know, stuff is put on TV. And, I mean, this is kind of conspiracy theories, but it's not.
Yeah.
Like, no, Matt, seriously, like, stuff is put on TV at certain times, specific times, to suit, like, the audience. Like, they put it, or like commercials, you know, like, it's all designed to go into your unconscious and activate, you know, desires and stuff like that. So I'm sure everything's done for a reason. Kind of, but no, I think it just works out like that.
Well, and I think there is something to be said for gender interest, and just like you look at, Lord, I mean, I can't say this for certain, but a lot of people I know who are fans of Lord of the Rings are male, and a lot of people I know who are into Harry Potter are female, and one of the common factors I can link there is that the author of Lord of the Rings was male, and the author of Harry Potter is female, and I think that there is a distinctive style that men and women have when they write. I think you can definitely tell when you read Harry Potter that the author is a woman.
Oh,
and
definitely.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not to say that that's a fault. Like, I would be a huge hypocrite to think so. But I just think that there is that distinct difference. And also, I read something a while back talking about how, I guess, Scholastic and Bloomsbury actually had Joe put her name as J.K. Rowling because it sounded
true,
more like a male name, so it would appeal to boys. So there, I mean, there's a lot to be said for what different genders are interested in.
They did do that.
And I mean, it's true with technology too. I mean, there are more men in the technology field than women. I went to join my school's radio club and I was the only girl there. And when I went to them and told them I knew how to podcast. Yeah, except they never really gave me any opportunities, because I don't want to, you know, be judgmental here and make any assumptions, but the only thing I can think of is that it was because I'm a girl. And when I went to them and said, hey, I know how to do this stuff, I can help you with a podcast, they never contacted me and never contacted me. And I was just like, fine.
Sue them.
Screw people.
Exactly. There you go. It's not.
You can make some good money, Laura. Yeah.
Jamie will be your lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'll want to cut.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, 85%.
Nice.
85%. And then he'll go up north and defend J.K. Rowling, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Oh, what a serious
You have a budding career in front of you, Jamie. Just come to the U.S. and be a lawyer.
Okay, awesome.
No degree required.
It's sort of...
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
With the gender issue, I kind of believe that women tend to take the books they read along with them more than the male gender does. You know what I mean? Like, I know my mom and my aunt are part of a book club, and most of all the book clubs I've seen are predominantly females. So I think the female gender definitely talks more about the books they read more than the male do.
That's probably true.
Which again makes you guys kind of, you know, it just shows that you guys break that rule as well. You know, it shows that you break that stereotype. So it's not just, you know, me being on the show that says not all women are not into technology.
Well, no, yeah, it's...
You guys are doing the same
what
thing.
What I said before, I mean, it's certainly not the rule. You know, it just seems that overall, it's true that guys are probably a little bit more tech savvy than girls are.
Well, I wouldn't say that girls don't have the ability.
No, no.
I would say it's more likely
girls
to
have
say
other interests.
They don't have the interest.
Right.
Sorry, I'm a
no,
bit
no,
of a feminist.
It's fine, it's fine.
You might have figured this out
it's
by
fine.
Now.
A bit. Our next email comes from Kylie15 of Dayton, Ohio, entitled Potter Watch Comment. She writes, "Hey, Mugglecasters, I wanted to share my initial thoughts about Potter Watch in Chapter 22 of Deathly Hallows. When I first read it, my very first thought was that it was kind of like the radio news show from World War II. The trio are pretty much the equivalent of the soldiers that were sent to fight off in Europe, and Potter Watch was their glimpse back home to the rest of the wizarding world. I know that World War II connections are obvious and numerous, but those were my thoughts. Mugglecast is the only podcast I listen to, and it's so good. I don't need any others. I love all those topics and discussions, not to mention the hilarious fun segments. Make the Music Connection is my favorite. Please keep doing such a wonderful job. Best wishes, Kylie."
I love your intonation, Matt. It's superb. Especially on the bits
I have
that,
to do it or I'm just going to stumble.
Okay, first of all, can I please just ask, please tell me that nobody sat there and said she did it because of the podcasts. Please tell me no
she
one
did
said
what?
That.
Because, yeah. Well, there's always a certain resistance to, you know, during a war or something, whether it's on the radio or if it's even like an underground newspaper.
Yeah, that's so, what I think it is. It's definitely cool to hear it, you know, regardless, because it's like, oh, you know, we've kind of been doing the same thing. So it's definitely cool, but I'm not 100% sure it would be her, you know, acknowledging the show,
yeah,
the book or anything.
I don't think it is. It's a very nice thought, though.
All right, we're going to move things off to chapter by chapter of Deathly Hallows. We're going to move on to this week to just one chapter. It's chapter 23, entitled Malfoy Manor. And where we leave our characters off from the previous chapter, apparently Ron told the trio that the name was taboo, Voldemort, and Harry accidentally let the word slip, and now they are being cornered by at least half a dozen wands at their tent. So now they're caught.
It seemed quite a sort of blanket charm to be able to make a word taboo. Like, if that isn't too difficult a spell, then you can make, you know, you could do anything. That implies almost limitless magical ability. Like, you know, other people could do it as well. It's weird. Like,
well, one thing,
they must be abusing the system completely.
One thing that I always wondered, it was if his name was taboo before, because they always refer to him as he who must not be named and all that other stuff. So I just wondered, you know, when he was in power the first time, was his name also taboo? Like, you couldn't say it?
I don't think so. Because did he... I don't think he had power over the ministry at that time. I think the whole taboo thing wouldn't have happened unless he had that much control over the wizarding world.
Yeah, I think that's what the crucial difference is that he had control over the ministry in the seventh book. And I think He Who Must Not Be Named is just something that sort of came about from fear. Just like... it's probably not the best example, but like, for instance, when you have curse words that people have come up with substitute words for, just because it's something that people don't like to say and people don't like to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, so we start off with a chapter with Harry, Ron, and Hermione. Kind of, well, they're in the dark in the tent because Ron used the Deluminator, and Harry sees Hermione pointing her wand at his face and using a swollen charm to blow up his face to unnatural size and unrecognizability. Is that a word?
Yeah.
It is
unrecognizable. Okay, it is now.
I don't know.
So they're captured by Fenrir Greyback, who apparently is allowed to wear Death Eater's robes, but he's not allowed to have a Death Eater mark because he's not that great yet.
Yeah. Does anyone find, and I noticed this while I was reading, like the numerous times when Fenrir kind of made really disgusting comments about stuff he wanted to do to Hermione.
Hey, he's a sociopath. He's a brilliant character, though. He's an amazing character.
Yeah. He really is. And it's interesting because I was actually just talking about this with a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, and this friend in particular doesn't read Harry Potter. And for a long time, she'd been under the assumption that it was a children's book. And I think that this is just another reminder that these books aren't just meant for kids. You know,
it's true, yeah.
Kids can read them, but it's a book that's meant for everybody. And you look at an issue like this complete objectification of women, and then this guy clearly wanting to hurt Hermione, I think it's another reminder that this is
a big reminder to also the children who read this that, you know, in a lot of situations when you're in trouble, people won't give you lenience just because you're a child.
Right. Yeah.
They will kill you if they can.
I was going to say, it's not just Hermione. I mean, he talks about washing Harry down with some butterbeer. You know, he's just the disgusting.
Well, he doesn't want to get indigestion, Mike. Be fair.
Yeah, that's true. You don't think it's not carbonated? That beer is not carbonated?
Oh, no. I don't think they have wizard Malox or something.
To be honest, I think I'd rather meet Voldemort down a dark alley than Greyback, because Voldemort, for all his sins, is a principled sociopath, which sounds
at least you won't feel anything after he kills you.
Yeah,
Fenrir, you'll
exactly.
No, let's not go into that. I don't want to. I don't want to talk about that.
He's just going to kill you, Voldemort, because he doesn't care about, you know, his powers, his goal. Whereas with Greyback, no one knows what his goal is, and ambiguity is scary.
Fenrir also wants to scare his victims to the point of, you know, trembling.
Yeah.
And he breaks down. What I really love what J.K. Rowling does with the previous book in Half-Blood Prince and in this book, she always mentions that Greyback smells like dirt, sweat, and blood.
And the tears of small children.
Oh, yes, of course. She's kind of like telling us what kind of a person he is or what he does. It's all in his mind is that he's always running. He's always in the dirt and dirty and sweaty and
killing people.
Yeah.
Getting bloody.
That's all
I would say
about.
He's a disgusting human being, but I don't even know that he's a human being, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
You know, it never entered my mind that Fenrir Greyback was a wizard. I always saw him as just a werewolf.
Yeah.
Until this scene when they mentioned that he had a wand in his hand. I don't know why.
He's definitely, I think, one of the scarier characters.
It's going to be interesting to see him in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Would you bring him home to his parents? To your parents?
Not without a bath.
Aww. That's so nice, Matt. Give people a chance. I like that. I like that.
I mean,
he's
put
only
a muzzle
killer.
On him first.
Exactly,
Yeah.
You can't prejudge people just because they smell of dirt, sweat and blood.
Just because they might kill your family?
Yeah, Laura. Broaden your horizons, for God's sake.
Harry, Ron, and Hermione are taken up to Malfoy Manor to be shown to Voldemort initially. They're going to Malfoy Manor to be inspected by the Malfoy family. And they are met by Narcissa Malfoy and Lucius and Draco. Now, what I loved about this scene, especially when they try to figure out if it's really Harry or not, is that Draco is so hesitant with saying yes or no of confirming the identity of the trio. Why do you guys think that Draco was so hesitant with saying yes or no? I mean, you see him in Hogwarts always trying to get Harry, Ron, and Hermione in trouble, and this is like his biggest, huge moment to really just rat them out, but he doesn't do it necessarily.
There's a difference between you know, causing trouble for people and having all their blood on your hands, and he would have their blood on his hands completely.
Definitely. Yeah. He knows that his decision basically is their mortality.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think it's just another example of, like, when he couldn't kill Dumbledore. Like, yeah, Draco may not necessarily be the world's best guy, but he's certainly not a killer. And even if you don't like somebody, just imagine this. You've grown up with somebody through all of your teenage years, like you met them when you were 11 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're 17 years old and they die. Even if you didn't like them, that is such a huge shock because you still grew up with them. And I don't know. I couldn't turn somebody in like that. And I don't think Draco could either.
Regardless of you always have those people in like middle school and high school who you always pick a fight with. And you know, kind of like your enemies in school, but never to an extent where you would want them dead.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just a really bad position that Draco was in.
Yeah.
I kind of actually have a little bit of sympathy for him in that.
Yeah, me too, because I feel like the thing about Draco is he just parrots a lot of what the people around him say. And because he's honestly just such a spoiled rich brat, he's never actually had to get his hands dirty. And then he discovers what all of that really entails and realizes that's really not the kind of person he is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he's also not really under his father's protection anymore either. I mean, he always looked up to his dad. I don't really see him as Lucius Malfoy's son, technically, because he's not really the kind of person that Lucius is. Lucius just kisses up to whoever he can just to get power.
Yeah, but you could also say about... Sorry, go on.
No, sorry.
Okay, well, I was going to say, you can also... I mean, Lucius and Narcissa display sort of something that I think completely separates them from everyone else, in that they're still parents, and they still, however much they kiss up to Voldemort and everything, they still put Draco above everything else. Whereas if you look in, beginning of Half-Blood Prince, when they go to Snape's and Bellatrix says how if she had children she'd, you know, give them up to
be
the Dark Lord.
Yeah, definitely.
Immediately. And
well, no, at the very end of Deathly Hallows 2, they portrayed their much love for Draco by pretty much betraying Voldemort. Or Narcissa did that, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, something that, I mean, we should probably just mention that happened a little bit before this was Harry, on the way to Malfoy Manor, kept getting visions of Voldemort going to Grindelwald. And basically, he was trying to get the Elder Wand out of him. So, mm-hmm. I mean, at this point, Harry's not quite sure what that's about. But
yeah,
just thought we should mention it. Because people get kind of bent out of shape when we don't mention things, even if there's not much discussion to be had about them.
Yeah. Well, we can't just talk every single sentence on the chapter. That would just...
Oh, yeah, we can. Didn't you know about our new segment? It's going to be word by word.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay. Oh, then that's all better then. Well, since you were talking about that, I really like that quote that Grindelwald told Voldemort. It was like, I knew you'd come, but your journey was pointless. I never had it. Like, Grindelwald was waiting for Voldemort to come.
Yeah.
Because he knew what he was after from the get-go.
It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And Grindelwald just doesn't seem evil then. He seems like he's recovered. And I think that solves...
He doesn't. Huh? No, I'm agreeing.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, no, I was going to say that it sort of... I think that solves the who's the more evil wizard. And it just, you know, Voldemort, I think, is leagues more evil than Grindelwald, because obviously he's capable of redemption. And Joe has pointed out on many occasions that Voldemort is beyond help. Anyone's help.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I never really saw... After reading a little bit of this, you can tell that Grindelwald was never really evil. That his whole vision of being evil was basically due to most of the publicity that his whole thing got.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the thing about Grindelwald is, regardless of whether or not he was evil, he never really got the chance to act on it. So it's almost like irrelevant, really.
I think Grindelwald is just mainly just like a link to Dumbledore's past.
Definitely.
Okay. So we get a little bit into the sword with when Bellatrix enters the house. Apparently, just before Bellatrix was about to announce to the Dark Lord to come over to Malfoy Manor, she sees the sword of Gryffindor, and she starts to panic to a grand scale, because apparently she has, in her mind, the sword is in her vault at Gringotts. That's apparently Snape had given her to put in her vault. So, although she doesn't know that that sword is actually the real one, and the one in her vault is the fake. But the reason why that she's, you know, freaking out so much is because there's something else in her vault that's really, really, you know, valuable to Voldemort.
Well, I think...
No. She's freaking out because she thinks that...
Because she thinks they stole
Horcrux.
It.
Yeah, she thinks,
yeah, she thinks that they took it out of her vault.
Well, yeah, she thinks that they took the Horcrux out of her vault.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry, I didn't put it right.
No,
we'll become more articulate, Matt.
Oh, don't even start with me, Britt.
Ooh.
Basically, Bellatrix gets really pissed off about the sword being stolen, and she sends everyone but Hermione down to the cellar with the rest of the prisoners. And what I really loved about this little thing right here was when Ron was screaming out to Bellatrix to take him instead of Hermione.
I know.
Put him in her place. Aww. That's like one of the very first times you ever see him proclaim his love for Hermione. He's, you know, sacrificing himself for her safety.
Yeah, I just have to say, when I read that, and I'm sure every other girl around the planet was like, oh.
And I think every single guy was like, here we go.
Whoa. Oh.
That's so mean.
I think we're more emotional than that.
Yeah.
The male species.
But it was the whole scene where Bellatrix tortured Hermione was awful. Not awfully written, but
just awful to take
awful
in.
To read, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Hermione's getting tortured in the background, but let's go with Harry and Ron right now. They're being sent in the cellar where they meet Dean, Luna, and Oliver, Vander, and Griphook.
Hook, yeah.
So, yeah. So, okay, they finally find Luna. They know where her whereabouts are. And they are hearing these screams intermittently that are Hermione's screams. And Ron is just screaming out Hermione's name over and over again. And, oh, Dobby came. Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm skipping ahead. Sorry. After they're hearing Hermione's screams, Harry quickly goes into the pouch that Hagrid gave him and looks into that mirror. And he sees Dumbledore's eye. And he starts screaming.
Or what he thinks is Dumbledore's eye.
Yeah, quotes Dumbledore's eye. And he screams out, "Help us, we're in the cellar at Malfoy Manor." And then the eye blinks and runs off. And then a few seconds later, Dobby comes.
Yeah. And this,
lucky.
I mean, of course, we all know what happens at the end of the chapter, which is very sad. But from that point, we know that Dobby takes Dean, Luna, and Ollivander?
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah,
and
he takes them. But right before they go, Dean and Luna proclaim their allegiance to Harry, saying they want to help. They don't want to leave Harry and all of them, which I thought was really sweet.
Yeah, they are cool. And I thought that the way that, even though when the trio is separated, the fact that they are still able to work together as a team, I think that's really cool, because Harry was listening very intently while Ron was going crazy, and he heard Hermione say that the sword was a fake. And so, of course, he goes to Griphook and says, "You have to tell them that this is a fake sword, or else, you know, we're doomed."
Exactly.
So that, you know, that's what Griphook does. And
So after Draco takes Griphook and to, you know, inspect the sword, they hear Dobby come back again, right? Don't they? Something keeps
No,
they hear a snap. They do hear a snap, because that's what. That's why they call over Pettigrew to come down and see what the noise was.
Yeah, maybe they heard the crack of Dobby disapparating.
Yeah, I think that was it.
And they send Wormtail.
So Peter Pettigrew comes down, and Harry and Ron decide to ambush him and tackle him. But there is one instant.
This scene was weird as hell. I did not understand.
It's hard to talk about it, because I got lost.
It was one of the scenes that I really had a hard time comprehending what exactly was happening, and I had to read it a couple of times tonight. And essentially, what I got from it was that the hand that Wormtail has, and maybe I should go over what the scene is just for a refresher. But essentially, when they ambush him, Wormtail puts his hand around Harry's throat, and Harry says, "Are you really going to do that? You owe me. I saved your life once before." And what I got out of it is that the hand depended on a certain amount of strength from Wormtail, or at least a certain amount of self-preservation. And the second that Wormtail faltered, because he did, and he knew Harry was right, the hand turned on him and took him instead.
Do you think that was Voldemort's intention? Like, that's because he knew what kind of a person that Peter Pettigrew was, that he would just, since he betrayed the Potter so quickly, he was afraid that Peter Pettigrew would do the same thing. So at the moment where he falters his allegiance, the hand would kill him.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at all. That completely sounds like something Voldemort would do.
Oh, do you think so? That's very interesting. Yeah. That's very interesting.
I agree with that, Matt. I think that as soon as there was that moment of hesitation in Pettigrew's mind,
it would kill
the hand automatically would kill him, because who knows, you know, in that situation what's going on. I mean, obviously in this case it was dealing with Harry, but you know, it's possible that had he done anything else that would be in betrayal of Voldemort, that the hand would just take care of him. And I like Laura's point, though.
That's very good.
What you were saying about how he's just, or was it Matt, that he's not a reliable person. You know, we've seen him sort of go back and forth between sides all along.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Voldemort's not stupid. He used Peter Pettigrew to his advantage because he knew what kind of a person he was. But he also knows how dangerous it is to keep a person like that at your side when they're so easily persuaded. So, I honestly think that's a good job on Voldemort's part to keep Peter Pettigrew on his side.
Yeah,
because it's a really strong hand. Mm-hmm. So, as long as he has it, he's a good ally. But once he starts to betray, that hand will turn on him and kill him. Because it's
like
obviously not intentional. I'm done.
Okay. Well, no. I was going to make a stupid reference. Have you guys seen the Neverending Story?
No.
Oh. Well, there's a... Oh. Well, this is going to be last then. But there was a big rock guy built out of rocks who ate rocks, and he had extremely strong hands as well. I don't know why I thought of that. That's a weird process.
Okay.
No, but going back to Harry Potter, I was going to say that when Bellatrix brings Griphook up, and then after he tells her it's a fake, she slashes another injury in his face. It just goes to show that she's completely soulless apart from when it comes to Voldemort. So she was terrified when her allegiance to Voldemort was doubted, and then as soon as it was shown that she hadn't screwed up and she hadn't lost the Horcrux, then she was fine and back to normal and hurting people.
Yeah.
Oh no, I definitely agree with that.
I think in both cases it goes to show that, you know, and I mean we already know this, but Voldemort is an extremely good manipulator.
Yeah.
You know, because he knows exactly the right things to say to Bellatrix to keep her, you know, sort of cooing at his side, and then he knows what exactly to give Wormtail to sort of keep his allegiance, but at the same time, he draws that fine line by saying, you know, the second Wormtail turns his back on me, he's going to die, and I don't even have to be there for it to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel it's that way with a lot of people, though. I mean, he doesn't care who dies at his expense, so to speak. You know? It doesn't have to be Wormtail. I mean, just in this case it is, but he doesn't care about anybody just as long as it's him who ends up prevailing in the end.
Right.
Well, I'm sure he has a slight favoritism to Bellatrix, because we noticed that in the very last chapter of the Hogwarts scene.
You're right.
He shows a little concern, but yeah, I definitely agree with that.
You know what I found really interesting, though, kind of switching to another perspective, is that when the hand starts strangling Wormtail, Harry and Ron try to save him.
It's their nature.
And I know, and it's just interesting because you consider, like, they're such innately good people that even though they're all in danger, their friend is upstairs being tortured, if there's someone in front of them dying, even if that person is a bad person, they still try to save him.
Well, yeah.
And that's interesting.
I think a lot of people could relate to that, too. I mean, if someone is killing themselves right in front of their face, your initial reaction would be to try to stop that from happening.
Yeah, I mean, think about all the movies you'll see and, like, in the end, the kidnapper or the murderer will try and put the gun up to their head and, you know, essentially kill themselves. And you always have the cops or the people who are there that they've tortured for so long try and jump and save them from doing it. I just think it's a natural thing that people just try and do. Plus, two life debts are better than one, so...
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay, so after Pettigrew's death, Harry and Ron run up to the foyer or whatever this place this is taking place at, and there becomes a huge fight between Ron, Hermione, and Harry, and you know the Death Eaters, and which really kind of just splits them apart is the huge chandelier that falls down onto Bellatrix and Hermione, and we find out that's due to Dobby, who comes in to help them save themselves.
Yeah.
So, you guys want to elaborate a little bit on what happens after that?
Well, essentially, like you said, there's a bit of a showdown, you know, and of course, at first, Harry and Ron kind of have the upper hand, but then Bellatrix sort of puts a knife to Hermione's throat and says, you know, you drop him or she dies.
Right, and that's when the glass chandelier falls.
You know what I found interesting about that, and I guess this might be me reading too much into it, but it seems like it would have been in Bellatrix's character, at least I could see her doing this, that the second Harry and Ron dropped the wands, that she would have slit Hermione's throat anyway.
Yeah.
It just seems like something she would have done. I don't know, but, you know, of course, that would have kind of
ruined the plot. She's crazy. She's just nuts, man. She's like out nuts, there with man. Fenrir Greyback.
Yeah.
What's that?
She's nuts, man.
She is, Jamie. I'm serious. She's nuts, man.
Dude.
She's out there with Fenrir Greyback. Dog.
Dog, man, dude. I think we should rewrite Harry Potter and completely Americanize it.
Well, if it was us who were writing the Harry Potter series, the trio wouldn't live past the first book. If it was...
Why? Because we're sadistic.
No, because I just want them dead.
So you're sadistic.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, but I do see that is in Bellatrix's character to you know, just to fool them, like, to trust them. To trust her that she wouldn't kill.
Yeah.
So, okay. So Dobby comes in to save them, and Dobby grabs onto Harry, who grabs onto Hermione and Ron. And at the very last second, like, Dobby just disapparates with them, and while they're floating out, there's a kind of like a little jolt with Dobby's hand, right? There's something that signifies that Dobby's doing something, like he's pulling them away or something.
Well, Harry said that he felt Dobby squeeze his hand, and his arm sort of jerked, and he thought that Dobby was trying to steer the direction in which they were going. I think that was when Bellatrix stabbed him.
Yeah.
Personally.
Well, did she stab him or, like, throw her knife at him? Because they weren't really very close, were they?
She might. She throws it.
She does something. I always thought she threw the knife at him.
No, she does.
She impales him with a knife, whether by stabbing or
throwing it. No, she does. She throws the knife. She definitely throws the knife.
Okay, is it that big of a deal?
He's so gung ho about this. Okay, let's just go with that.
So after she stabs him,
after she throws a knife at him, why do you think he was squeezing it? I think the reason why he felt a really big squeeze from Dobby is because Dobby was trying to fight the pain until they were gone, until they were safely back. Like he was fighting death while he was out there.
I think that works just fine. I mean, also if you know, I were holding someone's hand and someone stabbed me, I think right when they stabbed me, I might jolt a little bit. But you know, that's just me.
I don't know
how you react when people stab you.
Ow! 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 I would probably do that. Okay, so that's pretty much the end of the chapter. No, it's not. It's not. Sorry.
And then
I don't want to relive this scene again. That's why.
Oh, well, as we all know, Dobby dies. It's really, really sad.
It's really sad because the last two words that come from Dobby's mouth is Harry Potter.
Yeah. I think one of, like, the way the chapter ends is so, I thought, really heartbreaking, too, because it said something about how his eyes were reflecting the stars that they couldn't see, and I was just like, oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, his eyes glazed a bit, and you could see the reflection of the stars. Ugh. That was horrible.
It's a bloodbath in this book.
It was probably the worst death in the series for me. What about you guys?
No, serious.
Yeah. I knew you were going to say serious. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. But what do you guys think? I mean,
I think it was one of the worst, I would have to say.
It was definitely one of the most emotional scenes in the book. Not in the series, Jamie, in the book.
All right, okay. Okay, that's fine, Matt.
I think it'd be a more emotional scene in the book rather than when we see it in the movies, because we see Dobby in pretty much every single book after book two, but we only seen Dobby in the second movie.
So. Yeah, and I mean, do we even know if Dobby's gonna be in the film?
I would hope
so. I can pretty much. Yeah, they better.
They're splitting it in two. They should probably think about
that's
including.
That's true.
Aren't we going to have a little musical tribute to Dobby's death?
Yeah, but I think we're going to have to make Andrew come up with that because I don't have anything.
Okay, so
give him some work to do since he bailed on us this week to go hang out with Robert Pattinson and Stephanie Meyer. Jerk.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But let's something about being free, I would think, right?
Yeah. I want to break free.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
I want to break free.
There was one more thing. I just didn't know if we should bring it up. Maybe not. The Elder Wand. Harry actually gets it in this chapter, doesn't he?
Oh, yes, he does. I forgot to talk about that. Yeah, he steals two wands, doesn't he? He has two wands in his hand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
He grabs Draco. It definitely says he grabs Draco's wand. And little does he know what he has in his hand. All right, let's move on to let's move the show along a little bit. So we're going to move on to our next segment. It's relatively new, and Laura and I were talking about this the other day. Laura, do you want to emphasize a little bit on it?
Yeah. We a while back, you, me, and Andrew were driving through the nothing that is Southern Maryland. And we were talking about, you know, on the show, we've never actually talked about what our houses are. In all of this time of doing our shows, we've never, ever done that. And so we thought it might be kind of fun to go around and talk about, like, what we think each other's houses are. And maybe eventually, if people like hearing about it, we could talk about other people, like maybe celebrities, or you guys could send in your thoughts about who you might like to hear us talk about in reference to their house. So there you go. Let us know what you think of it.
So we doing who we think each other would be in, or who we think?
I think it'd be a little funnier if we guess like who the other person is.
Yeah,
instead of just
I think
who
so
we
too.
Think, because that's kind of ignorant, and really, who wants to hear what we think about ourselves? It's funnier if we try to talk about other people.
Well, I think for the first one, we should try and. Isn't that what you were saying, Laura? No, we've never discussed on the show what houses.
Yeah, we've never talked about us.
Yeah.
He's saying, okay. let's decide for each other. Like, Micah, I would tell you. Like, we would all tell you what you thought you'd be in.
And do I get to agree or disagree?
Yeah, sure,
you can say who you think, yeah. All right, so we're going to move on to Micah, since we're already talking about him. So, Micah, who do you think, what house do you think you should be in?
I would say probably Ravenclaw. What do you guys think of that? Do you agree, disagree? I mean, you guys know me pretty well by now.
You're definitely intelligent, and I
logical
think
too. So yeah, probably Ravenclaw.
Although I have to say, you're a little bit perverted sometimes, and it seems like most of the perverts are over in Slytherin.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
But you're
wait. Who's perverted in Slytherin?
They just all make, I don't know. They're more likely to make comments about people. Like, do you remember on the train in the sixth book where they were talking about how hot Ginny was in the train, all the Slytherins were?
Laura, all boys talk about that. Come out from under their rock.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not under a rock, okay? But it just seems like they're... Never mind. Fine.
No, it's fine. That's fine. Go on. Keep going.
Micah, I think you should be in... my reason why you should be in Ravenclaw is probably because a lot of the Ravenclaws tend to be very... hesitant with what they initially say. They think about what they're going to say before they say it. And since that's what usually you do, it's especially on the show, you pretty much wait until you have something logical to say in the show to bring your points. And I think that's one of the biggest Ravenclaw attributes.
Think before you leap, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know how many Jewish people would be in Slytherin. You know, I don't know if that would work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that might not work out very well.
True.
Can you imagine, like, no, I'm not going to say anything because that would be crossing boundaries that I get in trouble for.
Yeah. See, that's why I couldn't comment on that because I didn't want to.
Can you just hear, like, honestly, like, I don't know. Like, Harvey Waltenberg, Slytherin.
That's genius, Mike. That's genius.
Paul Rubenstein, Slytherin. This doesn't fit, does it?
Well, let's move on to Jamie. Jamie, what house do you think you're in?
I want to be in Gryffindor. To me, it's the only house for me. Gryffindor. I think I put other people before myself. and I like to think in the heat of battle I'd sacrifice myself for other people. And
would
Ravenclaw,
you really?
Yeah, no, I seriously would. I seriously believe I would. Obviously, it's hard to tell because, you know, you aren't in that situation. But honestly, I think I would. And I don't think I'm stupid, but I don't think I'm insanely clever. And I don't think I'm a complete duffer, so I don't think I'd be in Hufflepuff. Sorry, I'm going to offend loads of people saying that. And Slytherin, I think, is just a bit mean, to be honest. So I want to say Gryffindor.
I can believe that. I can see you as Gryffindor.
Yeah, me too.
Aww, thank you.
Why don't you want to be in Hufflepuff?
Full of duffers. No, I don't. I just haven't particularly felt any draw or affinity towards Hufflepuff like I have with Gryffindor, to be honest. And I like the Gryffindor common room. I think it symbolizes what I like, you know, chairs by a roaring fire, camaraderie, that kind of thing. Unlike the cold, heartless Slytherin dungeon.
We have fire.
Yeah. What?
We have Slytherin fire.
Thing.
Yeah, we have fire.
Yeah,
down
they
there.
Have fire.
Yeah, but it's like a crappy one in a stone wall. I don't know. What? I want a roaring log fire. And the. Yeah,
but Ravenclaw, too. I've been Ravenclaw. I don't know. Slytherin. I'm just trying to defend them a little bit.
Let's move on to Laura now. Laura?
You know, I've never been able... I think I'm just a muggle, you guys. I don't know. I've never been able to pick which one I thought I would fit into. Maybe that's lame of me.
No. Go on. You have to say one.
I have to... Oh, my God. I don't...
You get a free MacBook Air if you say.
Well, you're very political. Yeah. And
you are
very
political.
You love to read. Apparently. And
apparently, okay.
Only erotic fiction, man.
Oh, that's right. Only fan fiction.
Yeah. That's my favorite. You know, restrictedsection.org?
Yeah.
I love that place. That's where I always go.
Is that a real
site? I actually
read
that before I read Harry Potter. Yeah, it is.
Wow.
It's like NC-17 Harry Potter fan fiction.
Ooh.
It's so bad.
Link me.
Oh.
I don't know. I guess I always feel like people think about the best aspects of themselves when they place themselves in houses. So, I don't know. I feel like I could be really obnoxious and be like, well, I read a lot, so I could be a Ravenclaw, and I think that I'd sacrifice myself for my friends, so I'd be a Gryffindor.
Well, yeah. There are different qualities, but it has to be like, which one do you think you'd be in if you had to pick your...
The one, your biggest attributes.
I guess Ravenclaw, fine, Ravenclaw. I would be a Ravenclaw.
Well, since you can't decide, I would think Hufflepuff, because she wanted all the rest. Remember, she said, I'll take the rest. I don't want to participate.
No, I don't want to be a loser.
Oh, wow.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Well, now I can't say what house I'm in. I always saw myself as a Gryffindor also, but I was always really ashamed of saying it because everybody wants to be a Gryffindor.
No, I know what you mean. There is that. Sorry, go on.
It's just everyone just talks about, oh, I'm a Gryffindor because the trio is part of it.
Well, exactly,
but
yeah.
It's like, so if I say I'm a Gryffindor, then that technically means that I'm just conforming to what all the fans say they are.
No,
and
I think you would be a Gryffindor.
True.
I think you would be a Gryffindor.
I tend to talk a lot and don't necessarily think about what I say before I say it sometimes. And I think that's a Gryffindor attribute. A lot of people don't see the negative aspects of being a Gryffindor.
Like, they don't.
Everybody
they don't.
Has their good and bad. Everyone thinks that Gryffindors are just the perfect house, and that's really not true.
It's not true at all.
They tend to be very brave, but they also tend to be very headstrong with what they believe.
And reckless.
And reckless, definitely. I mean, even though they have good intentions, it's not always the best intentions.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, I would say Gryffindor.
Okay.
I think you'd be a Gryffindor, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. We have the same house. You two, Laura, Micah, you have your blue room. We'll have the red one.
Okay. All right. Well, if you guys all liked that, then you can write into us at each of our little at staff.mugglenet.com email addresses, and you can suggest anybody that you would like to know what their house would be, and we'll discuss it.
I think that this should be used by psychologists to help evaluate people, like the houses. If you self-identify as a Gryffindor, then that says a lot about you. So I look forward to the day when it's up in every psychologist's office. A huge Hogwarts banner with the four houses, and then you pick one, and then they're like, interesting.
Because they control the world, right, Jamie?
Yes, they do, Laura. Yes, they do. Very good. Very good.
They really do.
The world.
No, all seriousness. They run our freaking world.
They do. They honestly do. You think like, those guys charge what? Like $150, $200 an hour or whatever they do? Think about how much money that is.
That's at least $10.
I'm going to sit in my basement. and make $150 to $200 an hour just talking to people.
Amen.
Well, no, you don't even talk. You just listen.
You just listen, yeah.
How interesting.
And pretend to write on a clipboard.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I think, Jamie, we were going to have you do some make the connections for us.
Okay. You got any? Up. Well, is everyone... I can make some up if everyone's feeling...
Yeah, do it. We're feeling adventurous.
The fans really miss it. They really want you. I was trying to do it while you were gone, and I just...
They really want you.
I'm sure you did it well, Matt.
It was awful.
I'm sure you did it well.
I just... It blew. Okay.
Okay. Okay, Laura, you have to make a connection between Harry Potter, obviously, and a fossilized mammal buying out the Fox TV network.
Gosh. A fossilized mammal, you said?
Yeah, stop splitting hairs, Laura, and get on with it.
I guess it's kind of along the lines of Voldemort taking over the ministry, because he was so old. I mean, he's like, what, 100 and something? He's pretty old.
Either way, he's old.
And he's basically taking over this huge industry that has such an effect on their world, so I think that would be it.
It's good. Very good. Very quick. Very impressed. Okay. Matt?
Yes.
Okay. You, sir, your challenge is to make a connection between Harry Potter and tripping over a set of stainless steel playing cards on the top of Trump Tower.
Stainless steel. We all know that Trump pretty much wants to be associated with everyone, and he read on one of the wizarding cards that he spent £200,000 on to get a steel version of to play it with Neville Longbottom. But what he was intending to do was he was going to have Neville play with him on the very top of Trump Tower, and as Neville came up, he tripped over one of the steel wizarding cards and fell off the building.
That's very good.
But he bounced, so it's okay.
That's very good, Matt, but that's the story. That's not a connection.
There is no connection. How the hell can I make a connection with that?
The whole point is to make a connection. You've just made up a story. Although, I like your way of doing it. It shows drive, initiative, and feeling, which are misplaced attributes in today's world. So well done.
Well, isn't it my thing to never get this segment anyway?
Yeah, so
pretty
well
much.
All right, Micah. Yours is to... make a connection between Harry Potter and a rare breed of leopard opening a new terminal at O'Hare International Airport.
This is in Chicago.
No, I know.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Jeez, I was just really proud of myself for knowing that.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a good job. Nice job. A rare breed of leopard, huh?
Yeah. An extremely rare breed of leopard.
Well, then you could just compare it to Crookshanks being able to mysteriously open up the passage to the Shrieking Shack.
That's good. No, that's good. Very
like
good. I like that a lot, yeah.
And Crookshanks is sort of a rare breed, isn't he?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
he is.
Well, a clever cat like
well,
that.
He's part Neasel.
Yep.
All right, that's my job. I'm done tonight.
I like that. I like that a lot.
I still go back to the one about Hedwig blowing up. I don't remember what you asked me to make the connection on, but that was still my favorite one.
What was that?
You made some really cracked out connection about something blowing up, and I compared it to Hedwig exploring.
Oh, I remember. That was awesome, yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful, guys. Beautiful.
All right, well, I think that does it for this week's episode of MuggleCast.
Thank God.
Next week, I just want to let everyone know that Andrew will be back. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
He'll be fresh out of the Twilight movie set to definitely come and discuss some of the interviews he had with the cast and crew of this movie. Shmovie.
If he's not, like, over on the Hannah Montana set or something like that.
Yeah.
So let's remind everyone about our contact information before we wrap up today. Laura, if anyone wants to send anything to the P.O. Box, anything pickle-related, what do they do?
Well, I don't know where they're going to send anything pickle-related, but if you want to send us some gold, you can send that to P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia, 30028.
If.
Are you going to keep going? Or?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Okay, here we go. All right, you can also call in at MuggleCast voicemail. We're going to get back to them soon, I promise. I'm sorry, I'm reading transcripts.
Oh my God. You're just supposed to get the numbers,
please,
Matt.
Please.
This is what happens
it.
When Andrew isn't hosting the show.
All right, you can also call in and leave us a voicemail over Skype. You can do that on your Skype username, or you can call us with a few of our numbers. We have 1-218-20-MAGIC if you're in the United States. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. And if you're down under, you can call us at 02-8003-5668. Please keep your question under 60 seconds and eliminate as much background noise as possible. You can also visit us at mugglecast.com for our handy feedback form and contact any one of us. You can also use our first name at staff.mugglenet.com. Matt, you are now Matt at staff.mugglenet.com, right?
I am.
Who, you
are.
True. Excellent.
Who do we have to pay off to get that email address?
Brent.
Didn't we have, didn't we have another Matt at one point?
Yeah, we did. That's why I couldn't have it. No, I still can't. I can't have Matthew. It was just Matt.
Yeah, Matt. Well, no one calls you Matthew. Anyway.
I call you Matthew.
Don't. Please. You can call me Maddie.
No, because I can't say that properly.
Can I start calling you Matthew? What's your middle name, Matt?
Thomas.
Can I start calling you Matthew Thomas? Would I get mad at you?
Yeah, you can say Matthew Thomas or Matthew Tom. My mom does that.
Matt Tom.
That's cute. All right, well, also, don't forget about our community outlets. You can go to the MySpace, the Facebook, the YouTube, the Frapper, the Last FM, and the fan listing forums where a few of us are answering questions. I think that's what me, Matt, Andrew, Micah? Have you been answering questions over there?
Yeah, now and then I do.
Yeah.
Jamie, you need to go over there and register for
an
account.
I have an account.
You're such a liar.
I have an account. Seriously, I do.
Please, I beg you.
I beg you. Have a heart, Laura. Have a heart.
You know I don't have one of those, Jamie. I have a steel pump. It's far more efficient.
She's a girl.
Oh!
Sorry.
Excuse me?
What?
Yeah, get quiet. That's what I thought. Anyway, also please dig the show at dig.com. And I don't think they can vote for us at Yahoo Podcasts anymore, can they? I think they got rid of that
feature. Yeah, no, they got rid of it.
Yeah, sorry. I'm reading from the episode 128 transcript because, you know, some people don't get the transcripts up in a timely manner.
And what exactly do you do for the show, Laura?
I'm here, Micah.
Yeah, I know.
I'm here.
I know.
Okay.
I know.
All right.
We love joking around with each other.
Yeah.
Not really. Anyway.
All right. I think that wraps things up. So for this episode, I'm Laura Thompson. Forever a feminist.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Mike Tannenbaum.
I'm Matt Britton. And I'm Andrew Sims. We're going to see you all next week for episode 140.
With our newly implemented show program.
Yeah! Yep. Yeah! Yeah!
All right. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Whoa! Welcome, everyone. Pickleback list. God.
Okay, one more time. Okay. Well, let's. Micah, do you want to introduce yourself?
I did.
He already did. Just be like now
for the news.
Just
I'm
like
sorry.
Now, let's go over to Micah Tannenbaum and. Da-da-da.
All right.
I'm.
Well, now let's go over to Micah at the Muggle Dan. Blah, 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 blah.
No, well, you can say I'm back this
can
week
we just
because
leave it like that?
all the contest winners had been doing stuff for like the last.
Oh yeah, you can do that.
Why don't you talk about the contest?
Well, he has. Why don't we do that after he does the news?
All right. Well, let's
just be
okay,
like
we'll
Micah Tannenbaum someone... is back after da, 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 da,
like a
just,
month because yeah. Andrew did it for a while and then. Or Andrew did it for a week, then those two people did it, so I haven't been around.
Who's the two people?
We did a contest. We had him send in the news, and
oh, that's cool.
People voted on who they thought was the best, and those two people did it for 2 weeks.
Oh, that's cool. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Revolutionary.
Well, now let's take it over. No, oh, sorry.
I'm done.
Sorry? Oh. Okay. Let's take it over to Muggle... Damn, what's your name?
Micah. Yeah. We've met okay. before, I think.
Now let's take it over. We have at least once. Okay.
Get to know different people.
So step up from...
Oh my god! You're
genius.
A giant...
Genius. Genius.
For the record, I never brought him home to my parents. Okay.
10 points to me.
I'm on the radio! I'm on the radio!
What?
Who the... What the hell was that?
Bye, Becca.
You're who?
Oh, is that your neighbor who's apparently
no,
a big fan?
No, that's a friend of mine.
What's a male feminist? Like a person, is it
a slave driver?
Oh, that's so sexist,
just
Laura.
Kidding. I'm just kidding. But wait, were you talking about like the male equivalent of
no.
a feminist or a man who is
or,
a feminist?
I can't see. I wasn't sure. Both.
Okay.
Both.
Okay.
Both. What
well,
are
I would
they?
Say that I would say that we've had some very good examples of the male equivalent of a feminist throughout history.
Masculinist.
Yeah,
that sounds like a musician.
There's probably been quite a few of those. You know, they're really big on invading other people's countries.
Oh,
and,
Laura, that is
and killing
awful.
Them.
That's so sexist.
I'm not saying about you. I'm talking about masculinity.
No, you can't say that the male equivalent is chauvinistic. That's your claim.
Well, it is. You know, I'm just kidding.
I know.
Not really, but
giggity. Matt,
all right,
do a Family Guy impression.
Yeah, yeah, I got
No, do one, do one. Sorry. All right.
Okay.
I think we can skip the next email. It's the same thing that we
to?
Talked about.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if we wanted to, like... See, I thought this next email was actually kind of
yeah,
offensive.
Yeah, it's true. Because it's from a girl, isn't it, Laura?
Yeah. I like this,
no,
though.
No, I said I thought it was offensive.
Yeah, whatever. We know you're all in league with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.